we begin with an issue that you may have heard about, but you thought, well, that's not an issue that affects our community. And what we're finding out, yes, it does. It's the issue of sex trafficking. And to put this, since this is a G-rated program, to put this in G-rated terms, using children for immoral and illicit purposes, bringing them across state lines and sometimes across nations' borders. And it is a problem. If you remember the Super Bowl, you know, they were trying to deal with the sex trafficking during the Super Bowl. And I think people thought that this was something that affected European children, children from Eastern Europe, children from Asia, but it's also affecting African-American children. And it's something that has gotten an African-American actor and filmmaker and activist by the name of Michael Corey Davis, who has an organization called I Stop Traffic. He's put a film together to deal with this issue. He's also been an actor, Chris. He was in Tyler Perry's For Colored Girls and For Better and For Worse. He's been on Up All Night, CSI New York, Private Practice. He's done a whole lot of things, a documentary filmmaker. He has a documentary called Close to Home that talks about this issue of sex trafficking. And Michael Corey Davis, joins me live. Michael, welcome.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine.
Thank you for having me.
What got an actor and just an ordinary filmmaker, what got you involved in this issue?
Oh, that's a long story. Well, you know, it really began for me in 2003 when I was in Bulgaria acting in a project for the Sci-Fi Channel. Mm-hmm. And I saw countless signs of just child trafficking around me. You know, it was very evident that, you know, when you see like a young 12-year-old girl with a, you know, 65-year-old, you know, German man or what have you, something wasn't right, you know, because obviously this wasn't his child. The country itself was impoverished at the time in particular, so it was a lot of men were going there to exploit these young children in the form of sex tourism or in just trafficking them out and luring them to other countries. So I wanted to get involved, and I joined forces with a Bulgarian organization called Face to Face, and they basically went to these villages where these children were and tried to explain to them, you know, the pitfalls of falling in the hands of pimps and traffickers. So that's when I was really exposed to these stories. And I met a young girl named Svetlana who was 13, sold by her adopted parents to a pimp couple, kept in this brothel for 8 months, and she was forced to sleep with 10 to 15 men a day. In her eighth month of living there, she jumped out of a window and broke both her arms and legs to survive. And when I heard that story, I was so moved and horrified by it. I knew that if I could create a film to represent that life, that agony that she endured, mm-hmm. it would be the best way to educate these young children how not to get caught up into this scheme of trafficking.
Is this considered slavery?
It is slavery. I mean, at the end of the day, there's this conversation of, well, is this prostitution or is this slavery? I mean, at the end of the day, people have to break this perspective that prostitution is this crime that is victimless, that there is that women want to wake up and sleep with 55 different men a day. Mm-hmm. No, that's not really, you know, that's not the case. Of course it's slavery. Now there are extremes.
Right.
There are extreme forms of this prostitution. So what you saw in Cleveland, Ohio, where those three young women were forced and were kidnapped, mm-hmm. And then kept in a basement. You know, that is a form of trafficking, and that is a form, and that is slavery, you know, as well. So it comes in different forms. How we see it in the United States, in particular, right now, you know, it is considered slavery from the standpoint of these women that are abducted or lured or manipulated in by lovers, boyfriends, fictitious modeling agents, whoever they are. These women are not allowed to leave, the premises. They're not allowed to do certain things, whatever it is that pimp or trafficker deems as as going against the rules, for instance, then they can't do it. So sometimes that can be not eating. Sometimes that can be, standing in a corner, you know, because you disobeyed him. You know, it's these horrific practices, that to me are based on slavery techniques.
When I first, you know, heard about this, you know, I kind of raised an eyebrow and I went, well, this isn't really an issue, you know, that affects my community. And I think when we hear about this issue, we're thinking that it is affecting whites, particularly from Eastern Europe, that it's affecting Asians. And we would not think that it was affecting particularly, you know, folks in the African diaspora, you know, African Americans. But this is an issue that affects us too?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm actually not even sure why so many people in the black community think this doesn't happen in the black community. I mean, you have to look at, like I said, in Bulgaria, this happens in Bulgaria, Moldova, Cambodia, countries where poverty is ripe.
Mm-hmm.
So what would make the black community, when we already know statistically the black and brown community is the most underserved, underprivileged in the United States, is, you know, the economy tanking has hit the black and brown community more so than any other. You know, so why would traffickers not utilize that type of opportunity to exploit young inner city children? You know, so, and that's exactly what's happening. So you have gangs that have now gotten involved. So they're recruiting young girls. I mean, listen, let's look at some statistics. A pimp can make $150,000 to $250,000 selling a child into pornography, online pornography, escort services, strip clubs, in-call, out-call services. You know, when you realize that this is a lucrative business, that there is a value on a price tag on a child's head, then you can see how this would reach every community. So this is definitely an issue within the black community. You know, some of the elements that create, or fuel, this crime is abuse. Some of the elements that fuel this crime is poverty, lack of education. Now, as a black community, we have to be very honest with ourselves and look at some of the things that are in our community that we don't speak about. We don't like to speak about abuse, but there are scandals after scandals that come out within our community with pastors and school teachers and, you know, even law enforcement officers and so forth and parents, that this information is coming out, you know, consistently. But we keep a hush-hush attitude about it because no one wants to talk about this abuse and these types of things in our community. But as long as we don't talk about it, we leave our children susceptible to it. So this is part of the problem. And traffickers and pimps like to exploit young children who have been abused in some form, be that neglect, be that abuse, you know, be that physically, however, or emotionally, however it is. Those children tend to be way more vulnerable than others.
The documentary you put together, Close to Home, what is it? How do people see it?
Close to Home is not a documentary. So Svetlana's Journey was the first film.
Okay.
Cargo Innocence Lost is a documentary.
Okay.
And Close to Home is an exciting new project that we're in the development stages of. Close to Home is going to tell the story of three young girls across the United States that are forced, manipulated, and lured into prostitution. There's a young black girl named Aisha in Atlanta, and there are two young white girls, you know, in Tennessee and Ohio. And these are regular girls. These are regular teenage American girls going through the motions, you know, different types of children in different cities, different socioeconomic backgrounds. And that's the purpose of the film, to really spotlight how this happens, you know, to a complete swath of different types of individuals and who the traffickers and Johns are. So we have a fundraising campaign happening right now for Close to Home so that we can put together the funds for the film as well as the actual campaign itself. So the I Stop Traffic campaign has three components. The first component is to raise awareness, and that's where the film comes in. The second phase is to end the demand. We have to have a conversation, and we have to have action against the men who are perpetrating this crime on these young children. That's the reality that no one is wanting to look at. That without a demand, there would not be a supply. So who are these men that are demanding and in need of these children to be sold for $250 in public parks and motels and truck stops for sex? Lastly, we have to be able to support nonprofits and shelters, you know, who actually help prevent this crime and also work to rehabilitate these victims. You know, there are less than 50 beds across the United States to actually house victims of trafficking. So a lot of times in law enforcement, when they rescue these girls, they put these girls into the court system, and then these children end up becoming viewed as juvenile delinquents. So they're not even getting the services that they need and the therapy that they need after such a horrific crime, you know, has befallen on them. So this is a system that has to really be turned around and looked at and reevaluated from the standpoint of prevention first, and then also correct rehabilitation.
What is the role of parents and grandparents? There are a lot of parents and grandparents listening. What can they do to make sure their kids and grandkids don't get caught up in this?
Man, that is a wonderful question. Thanks for asking it. Because part of the problem is that no one wants to talk about this, Amos. Like, people don't. Parents have an issue saying words like penis and vagina and sex. Mm-hmm. That, you know, natural body parts, human body parts that create us, you know, right now as living beings. When you're afraid to talk about these things, you know, on your own, then you can't impart the healthy, correct knowledge to your children. Therefore, your children are going to learn that from music videos and hip-hop and pornography online and all the sexualized images, you know, that really help to create misogynistic attitudes, in particular for young men. Therefore, looking at a young girl and running up to her and grabbing her butt or touching on her body he's in his mind, he's not exploiting her. He's not devaluing her. And that's what helps to create a chain reaction of that young boy becoming a man who can go and buy that woman on the street or buy that young girl, because there's a sense of devaluing that's been happening. So as parents, we have to start talking to our kids about our true purpose on this planet, our true value. I say that because a lot of the young girls who get pulled in are pulled in off of the lure of money and love. So pimps are able to approach young girls based on, I love you, I can make you feel good, I'm listening to you, I can be that father figure in your life. Right. So when these young girls don't have a parent talking to them, giving them that kind of support, giving them that kind of love, letting them know that you are more important, your body and your self-worth is more important than a cell phone or a new shoe or, you know, a new purse, you know, then suddenly it becomes harder for these pimps to lure these children, these girls that way as well.
We're talking about, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We're talking with Michael Corey Davis, filmmaker, activist, talking about his effort close to home, you know, and spotlighting the issue of what is called sex trafficking, that is impacting young ladies in the African American community. Where does drugs fit into this? Is drugs a part of this?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, drugs, gangs, it's all a part of this, you know. And like I said, that's why I say poverty, lack of education, you know, lack of job opportunities, it all plays a role. I mean, we see the same thing in other countries. Drugs plays a role in particular when it comes into the breaking period, the grooming period. So, you know, a lot of times the way that pimps and traffickers operate is, you know, they will lure a child in, you know, offer them drugs, offer them, you know, and it starts off small, try a little bit of weed, and then from there it's, oh, well, try this, you know, because, you know, it's easier to manipulate someone who's hooked. It's easier to manipulate someone that now has a drug addiction, you know, so that's a part of it. That absolutely is a part of it. And, of course, if young children are already involved in drug use, then it becomes even easier to manipulate that child, too, because now most likely they're involved. To even get the drugs, they're hanging out with a crowd of people that they probably should not be hanging out with.
We're talking with Michael Corey Davis. It's 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos for a Tuesday. Let me go to the phones. And Bev, hi there.
Yes, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
I would just like to commend Michael Corey Davis. I'm a foster parent, and I see some of what he's talking about, how our children are exploited, how they do sell their bodies for a purse, a cell phone, and I just want to commend him. I'm glad that somebody has taken up the fight to fight for our children. We have it hard enough as a black society, especially with our black men, to get them on the right track. And then to have some of our own people selling these children into slavery, sex slavery, I mean, it's very appalling. And so I would just like to applaud you for your work.
Thank you
so much that you've taken this fight. And I really appreciate a black man such as yourself. Thank you.
I appreciate the call. Thank you. Michael Corey Davis, we're talking to you on what is National Night Out, where there's all these events in the evening and lights are porch lights are up. And we're also going to be talking about taking a bite out of crime. And like many other cities, we've got a violence problem this year. We're not Chicago. We're not New Orleans. But for here, it's kind of a spurt. And so everybody's kind of running around saying, oh, we got to get together and talk about this one. So when we talk about crime in the community, is this also a subject that needs to be put on the table?
Absolutely, because the thing is, they all go hand in hand. You know, we talk about, and I understand the need to separate, like for instance, you know, black male crime on black male crime,
uh-huh, right?
But it's the same thing, because if it all goes back down to a lack of moral fiber and a lack of purpose, you know, and then again, lack of opportunities. So if young black men are killing each other, you know, and they have a lack of respect for each other's life, then what makes anyone think they're going to have respect for a young girl's life? So if he can kill the guy walking down the street just because he's wearing a different color, then why wouldn't he exploit the girl and sell her for hundreds of thousands of dollars? You know, it's all the same thing. We have to get back into control over our youth, mm-hmm. and their perception of what is right, what is wrong, what is cool, what is uncool. You know, this is it all goes into the same pool, mm-hmm. Of what I call just like a devaluing of purpose, a devaluing of self.
239-1310. Back to the phones, and Don. Hi there.
How you doing, Michael?
Hey, how are you, Don?
Hey, where is the church at in this conversation? This is another group of people that are very, very silent when it comes to, I mean, their mission is to help and to point things out and to do this and to take care of the homeless and the you know, the down and trodden. Where are they at in this whole thing? But you never hear them. And they're a silent group, too. And they're a big group that has a lot of power.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
They can get this message out. So what's your real? Give me the real.
Well, I will say this.
I hear you laughing, see, but you know what
I will
say
this.
About.
Across the United States, there have been a lot of churches, actually, that have become very active in regard to spreading awareness. There, in particular, a lot of the youth groups, a lot of the young students, because I've done a lot of screenings of my previous films in churches and colleges and high schools, and I will say that the young kids are so impressive. They're very active in regards to creating like block walking campaigns, you know, going out and educating, aligning with other churches and spreading the word that way. Now, I will say that it seems to me that sometimes the impediment comes from the adults in the church community, where they have an issue with speaking about, again, sexuality. And you can't talk about sex trafficking without having a conversation about sexuality or sex in general. And it seems to me where that sometimes becomes the impasse. I will say that some of the things that I do think that local churches, big and small, can do, I don't see enough of, in particular within the black community, such as having a conversation, like having sermons about this issue, the exploitation of our youth and why this is happening, and bringing and tying that into a conversation about self-worth and self-value. I don't see a lot of the church communities in a lot of the churches and within the black community embracing this issue from the standpoint of adopting a shelter. There are tons of shelters that need support, where these children need clothes, these children need mentors, where church members can go into these communities, into these shelters, and actually teach these young girls how to sew, how to knit, how to fix cars, how to, you know, basically do things that would give them an opportunity in life to make money on a healthy in a healthy front. A lot of these children need to feel like they're loved again, need to feel like God has not shunned them. And so absolutely, I mean, look, if you were raped 15 times a day for 3 years, you may feel like God has shunned you as well. So I really do feel as if the churches need to be involved with from the victims, from a preventative standpoint, a rehabilitative standpoint, and then also funding some of these shelters and campaigns and taking part in block walking campaigns, going to truck stops, giving out information to these men, because I keep saying truck stops because this is where a lot of the trafficking of young children happens. So, you know, this is an ideal place for an entire congregation to be giving out information and praying for these men and giving them an opportunity to speak about whatever it is that may be ailing them, you know, to where they feel like this is the only outlet for them as this young child and having this sexual encounter.
All right, I need
I'm quite sure this is what Jesus would do.
I'm not only quite sure, but this is exactly what Jesus did. It said that Jesus went into, you know, places where there were, you know, prostitutes and other types of people, and this is where he shined his light. That's what the Bible says. So I don't think that, and that's why for me, I've often looked at this from a standpoint of, to me, this isn't, these types of illnesses on our planet is exactly where you should see Christians.
All right, hold on, Michael Corey Douglas, can you hang? Can you hang for a little bit?
Yes, I can.
All right, hold on, we'll take a break and we'll come back and continue the conversation with you at 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoon's Name is coming up. Carpe Diem! We talked to the founder of Carpe Diem Schools literally a year ago. And now they're back. Well, not the owner, but the principal of how well they're doing. We'll talk to them and a whole lot more. It's Afternoons with Amos for a Tuesday. All right, welcome back. We're with filmmaker Michael Corey Douglas. Let me go back to the phones in Shalandon. Hi there. Oh, we answered Shalandon's question. Let me go to Larry right quick at 239-1310. Hi there. I think what happens is folks hold so much AT&T, the lines just go, they'll call back. What can people do? What can listeners? Before I ask that, we've had our attorney general here in the state of Indiana. This is an issue that he's talked about, but he didn't go out of his way to say, hey, African-American community, this is important to you. And then all of the celebrated cases that we've heard about, whether it was the young lady in Utah, the young ladies in Cleveland or whatever, have never involved women of color. So when we see Nancy Grace talking about this, when we see CNN and MSNBC and Fox News talking about it, and it's in the tabloids and it's in the weekly magazines, and we don't see us, is that one of the reasons we think it doesn't exist in our community?
Probably, but you know, I'll tell you, I think that's a huge positive that we don't see black faces when it comes to this crime. Because if we did, there wouldn't be the government appropriated funds that have happened, you know, since 2005, since the passing of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. Mm-hmm. You know, there wouldn't be funds coming into the communities that way. You know, I think that when people, and at least when the majority of the United States assumes that this crime is only happening to young brown and black children, then there really tends to be less of an interest in donating funds or you know, putting money towards shelters and initiatives that will prevent that. So the fact that we're seeing young white girls you know, coming out now and being considered as victims is a healthy thing, because now we know that more people are going to care. And I know that may sound very cold to some, but that is the very true reality. My first film, Svetlana's Journey, has, you know, it's of a young white girl, a European girl, and that really caught the eye of a lot of media and a lot of attention. If it was, you know, Shantae's story, I don't think that would get the same attention. You know, so I think that's the positive that we have to consider. It certainly doesn't mean that the black community shouldn't construe that this is happening in our community. I mean, what do you think that, again, when you have a large amount of, the disproportionate amount of poverty in our communities, what do you think these young it becomes very easy for pimps to exploit these young girls and use money as the way to lure them in. You know, and it starts off very easy. It starts off with a new pair of shoes, like the woman who just called Bev, who's a foster mother. I'm sure she sees it as a foster mother, you know, sees pimps coming around, maybe even her group home or her kids, and offering a purse, offering a pair of shoes, offering a new cell phone, and then suddenly it's, you know, come hang out with me at this party, and then it's introducing you to people that are older than you. Now you think you're a little bit more cool. Then it's the drugs, smoke some weed, and then just the alcohol, and then it's taking you home, and then it's the kiss and the romance, and then all of a sudden it's, hey, you know what, I don't have any more money, I need you to hook up with some of my friends for me. It's just hooking up. If you love me, then you would do this. And then it's kind of like, well, I guess you're right. And then if she doesn't, then it's the smack in the face, and it's like, you made me do that. And then because she's already been abused, you know, it's this whole idea, it's just this ugly cycle. And the thing is, people may look at it and say, well, my kids aren't abused. You know, well, understand that this doesn't only happen to abused children, but let's look at that number. In the United States, there's 7 million children that are abused. 5 die every day in the United States. 7 million children. And out of that 7 million, 80% of those children are abused by neglect. So, you know, we have to start to reevaluate how we take care of our children, how we support our children. If you want this to stop, that's going to be one of the first things we can do, is to become better parents, better communities to parents. You know, that's another thing. Even if you don't have children, Why are you still allowing children to, you know, act reckless on the street in front of your house and not have a conversation with them? It's almost as if parents and adults have become afraid of kids. And now that's a problem.
Mm. How do young girls escape?
Well, that's the scary part, is because young girls, it's very hard for a young girl to escape this. When someone is threatening to use pictures of you being gang raped by men and put that onto your social networking sites, send that to your family, when someone has gotten so deep into your psyche, into your head, and manipulated you, it's very hard to leave. A lot of times these girls end up, you know, dead. They end up so traumatized that the pimps just throw them out on the street, and then they end, like I said, they end up in sometimes in foster homes or in, you know, in the criminal system, you know. So, and that's part of the problem, is that, you know, it's really challenging. We really want to prevent this from happening, because once someone is in it, it's really hard to get them out of it. Even even if you rescue a victim, and she's now a survivor of this.
Right.
We really have to comprehend what trauma it is on a person's body to be constantly raped,
abused, and
over and used, and told that you're nothing, and made to feel nothing. And you know, and it's you. How does that person reassimilate back into a society, you know, where they're not even viewed as human?
Mm.
You know, how does that happen? So this is the challenge that, you know, we in the anti-trafficking community face, and which is why I'm a very strong believer in prevention. You know, let's prevent these crimes from happening, because the outcome is so challenging and so time-consuming and so costly. You know, like, United States government, I believe, spent $124 billion, you know, in 2011, you know, which is like the recent statistic that I uncovered, just on abuse. You know, just on abuse of children, $124 billion. Now, imagine if we were able to prevent this. How our tax dollars could be better served.
I got a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. How hard is it to get the so-called men that are putting young girls on the street put in jail and keep them there? Laws need to be made to do so. Would that help?
Yo, absolutely. And that's something that I can say I'm very much so encouraged by in the United States, is that there are a lot of states in the past few years. When I first started this, it was pimps were going in and coming right out. It was like, you know, it was just like a rotating door for them, you know. But now there are a lot of states that have taken on laws where they're not considered misdemeanors. They're actually going in jail as felons. California has taken on a law like that. New York has taken on a law like that. And, you know, other states are now doing the same thing, where these pimps and traffickers have much longer jail time. You know, but part of the problem still is that there are laws that require the victims to have to testify.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, the level
you
of
you
got to
get up there in that courtroom and drop the
dime. Level of fear that this 13-year-old, the 16-year-old, and also embarrassment child has to now have to speak directly to that person who's manipulated her on some time and say that he did, and not be afraid of any kind of retribution, because trust, guys have, you know, they have allies and they have other people, and they say, if you ever tell on me, you ever put me in jail, so and so was going to kill you.
Right.
And those threats are very real and very much so, probably even acted on. So now there are laws like the safe harbor laws, which there is a petition on the website that we have, istoptraffic.com, and we're asking all of your listeners to sign that petition. By signing that, it's under the problem. So istoptraffic.com, click the problem, and you'll see it show up on that page. The Safe Harbor Act has been passed in New York, has been passed in California. We want it passed nationwide, and it basically removes minors from the jurisdiction of being viewed as criminals. So it removes them from the jurisdiction of the criminal justice and juvenile delinquency systems. So no more can they be viewed as a criminal. They're viewed as a victim, which means that resources are now provided for them. And their testimony is not mandated in that courtroom trial with that pimp and trafficker. Now, that's a big part. So they will still, they don't have to testify, but they still have to help law enforcement build a strong case.
Let me go to Anonymous right quick at 239-1310, and I may take one or two more calls. Go on, Anonymous. You're on the air. What's up?
Hi.
Hi.
Well, first I'd like to commend your guest there on the work that he's doing on human trafficking and making us aware of things. I'd like to speak to the role of the church. And within my local church, our women's mission group has worked with the human trafficking issue for the past 3 years. And as a matter of fact, in Indianapolis, during the Super Bowl year, we worked extensively with other groups here in the city that tried to work with children, especially who have been caught up in human trafficking, and we had several sessions with legislatures and also with the persons in Homeland Security, under whose jurisdiction human trafficking falls under in the state of Indiana. And we've had educational programs throughout those years where we educate people, and we also offer financial support to safe houses and people that work with and provide help, counseling for those children who have been rescued. So that's my comment.
All right.
Can you also say the name of the church that you attend?
She's gone.
Oh, she's gone.
I wish she had. Let me go to another Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
Hey, I had a comment for your guest, Michael. I commend you for your effort and what you're doing. There was a case, I think, just the other day about someone that was exploiting their own daughter.
Yes.
And this was their parents, you know.
Yes.
It was devastating to me. I was.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You bring up a very good.
I think Anonymous made the point, and then the NSA must have got him there.
But you know what? He raised a very good point. Traffickers and pimps are not just men.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just these criminal syndicates. They're also family members. And this is something that is a reality. This is something that is a reality, there is a percentage of that we have to also look at. And again, that goes to the abuse conversation. You know, see, they really are all tied in many ways. Not saying that every trafficking victim is abused, but just saying that creates a very vulnerable, at-risk population. You know, if you start to abuse a child, you leave them by neglect, not just talking sexual abuse, you just leave them more susceptible and vulnerable for someone to exploit them and manipulate them.
Let me go.
Let
me go to another Anonymous right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. Praise the Lord. How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
Your guest, Michael Duncan. I commend
Michael Corey. Michael Corey Davis.
Michael Corey Davis.
I'm sorry, Michael Corey Davis. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm a Christian woman, and I live in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I've been struggling with an issue or praying on something that had occurred in Dayton, Ohio. Actually, Trotwood, Ohio. And I want to know the human trafficking. Does it go from state to state? Can people practice it in from state to state with like their child or like say a father or a certain family individual is maybe practicing, but they can't really open up or share their viewpoints on how to, like you were saying, how to kind of leave or escape or walk away from that situation, knowing that they have been under years of psychological abuse and damage. How can that person survive this or get out of this? How can you, how can you get that in the open?
Well, part of that is that's where the wonderful work of nonprofits come in, because you have a lot of, there are nonprofits that actually go to the areas where young girls are and children and women are being prostituted. There are specific areas, like I know here in Los Angeles, there's like a Sepulveda corridor where we know that a lot of women are prostituting as a line of motels, and you see these young girls walking and kind of hanging about. So there are some Christian organizations, there are nonprofits that I know and have walked with that actually go and talk to these young girls, try to give them information, give them kits. Sometimes they're chased away by pimps, you know, even. And that's how sometimes these girls get rescued and get pulled out of it. You know, there's a trafficking hotline, 888-373-7888. I'll give that number again.
What's the number?
888-373-7888. So it's 888-3737 and then 888.
888, okay.
So a lot of these young girls do call. They actually build relationships with some of these groups that go out. But that's something, that's one way. But again, it's a big challenge when these children are part of this criminal enterprise. It becomes very hard to leave. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of times the way they leave is through, you know, drug-induced comas. You know, they the overdosing on drugs, and they get the pimp leaves them somewhere, in a hospital, on the street, or in the room, or whatever it is. You know, something so severe, something so drastic and violent may happen where they finally get the gumption to run away. You know, but now you have this person who's been so abused and abandoned, who's now run away. And living on her own, you know what I mean, and that's again part of the problem, because now these children, in instances like that, they don't know where to go. So this is why we have to create this heightened level of awareness, so that in a case where someone does escape, if that does happen, they know that there are services that are available for them, and they won't be viewed as a criminal. That's a big part of it. Sometimes there's
the
fear
factor. Can you operate from state to state? Like I said, I live in Indianapolis, and I used to live in Ohio. What can you do from state to state if there is a family member that may be involved or might be participating in another state? What kind of rights can a person do in the state where they're currently living at now?
Do you mean as a trafficker, or do you mean as a victim?
Let's say maybe the person is exposed as being a victim.
Okay.
And although, you know, you can't do anything with grown people, like adults, you can't do anything with them, because most of them are grown. Like you said, most of the men, or maybe women too, that are, it could be done both ways, that are being abused and exploited and manipulated and using a psychological abuse on them, creating a situation where,
well, let me tell you this.
They can't
if you
really
can
think
prove,
through this process. They don't know how to process all of this.
Right.
If you can prove that there is a commercial sex act happening and this person is a minor, then it falls under trafficking. If this person is not a minor and you cannot prove that there is a commercial sex act, meaning an exchange of money for sex, and this person is not a minor, then it becomes it becomes harder for a case to be brought, because it seems as if it's coming, this is happening based on this person's volition.
But let me ask you, Michael Corey Davis, if you cross state lines, is that still a federal crime?
Oh, absolutely.
That's the man.
That's trafficking is when you are engaged in a commercial sex act within the same state, within the same city, or if you leave state lines as well.
And if you cross state lines, then that's uncle coming after you.
Yeah, that's a federal crime. Absolutely.
All right, Michael Corey Davis, the website is istoptraffic.com. So that's the letter I, then stop, and traffic, all one phrase, .com.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yes,
and
it
then
is.
The hotline number you gave, that is for?
That's the National Human Trafficking toll-free hotline.
So if somebody knows somebody that's being victimized, that wants to escape that they can call 888-3737-888.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Michael Corey Davis, it's an honor and privilege to have you. I have to have you back, because this is a subject that we really didn't know that much about. Our community did not know that much about. Now, you know, 44 minutes later, we know a lot more. and we appreciate having you on.
And thank you so much for giving this some well-needed attention.
All right, we appreciate that. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310's After News. Name is